Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. So three-time James Beard Award-winning TV personality, chef, writer, and teacher Andrew Zimmern is universally regarded as one of the most versatile and knowledgeable personalities in the food world. As a creator, executive producer, and host of the Bizarre Foods franchise on the Travel Channel, Andrew has explored cultures in more than 150 countries, promoting impactful ways to think about, create, and live with food. A few years back, he got into the food truck business, and the eighth season of Bizarre Foods premieres this Tuesday, June 21st at 8 Central on the Travel Channel. And joining us to talk about the new season is Andrew Zimmern. What's up, my friend?
Hello, Dave.
Hello, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I was saying to you before we got started, big fan of the show. Like, my kids absolutely love every adventure you go on.
How old are they?
They are 15, 11, and 3.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a nice...
Well, the three-year-old and I have the same sort of maturity level and moral compass. I'm glad the older kids can relate.
Yeah, they can. They totally can. And you know what it kind of does? It kind of opens them up to try new things. Because if you're willing to do what you do, I think it makes it a lot easier for them to try new foods as well. It really does.
The place I hear this the most is in the supermarket. 2-3 times a week back home, I'll find myself pushing my cart through an aisle at the local grocery store. And there's always someone who comes up to me, a parent, sometimes with kid in cart, and said, you know, we DVR your shows and play the Andrew Zimmern game, which apparently has something to do with, if that guy can eat this, you can surely eat your peas.
I think you're right.
Which is wonderful. And just on that small legacy alone, I would be very, very content with where I've gotten. The great joy for me is the people who apply that same principle to other matters, because as much as it is that I'm a food guy, I could care less about the fact that the show is about food. I want to tell stories about culture. I use food as the prism through which I, you know, reveal nuances of color and light to people about those foods and about those cultures.
Well, you
but
know,
at the end of the day, all I really want to do is have people, you know, be more patient, more tolerant, and understanding. So if I can get someone to be interested in someone's food, maybe I can get them to be interested in some people.
Sure.
We have a problem liking other people in America. We like people's food before we like them.
Yeah,
so
it's absolutely true. Now, I've heard that at a very young age, you knew you wanted to somehow be part of the food and fine dining world. How did you kind of, why did you find interest?
It was one of those things where there was an internal, you know, spark inside of me that was always there. So when I first started traveling and eating with my parents at age 4, 5, 6, you know, I was so clearly geeked out about it. My parents... there's a picture of me in my kitchen. I'm about 5 years old. I'm tearing apart some seafood soup that has big chunks of clams and mussels and squid and a lobster claw in it. And I'm making a mess. I'm sitting at the end of a table at a family event in our summer home growing up. It's 1966. I'm 5. And underneath it says future food star. That my mother wrote, I guess, when I was about 3 years later.
Wow.
When she had the thing framed.
Wow.
It fascinated me. You know, I begged my father to take me with him on weekend business trips to Europe so I could try the foods that I, you know, read about in cookbooks or see on TV in the early days of food television with Julia and Jacques and, you know, James Beard's short term on TV, or, you know, Galloping Gourmet or whatever. I read cookbooks, you know, all my parents' cookbooks I'd read by the time I was 12 years old. And I begged my parents to let me cook in restaurants by the time I was 14. So it's always been a part of my life.
Well, and then fast forward a little bit, your first foray into national television, you were an in-house chef for HGTV. How did that all come about?
Well, there were a bunch, actually, for a couple specific shows, Rebecca's Garden and a show called Typical Mary Ellen, which may have been the worst best show on TV. I think if you launched Typical Mary Ellen right now,
yeah.
I mean, just aired the program straight, but put it on Showtime and called it a comedy, people would say it was the most brilliant send-up of those types of shows.
Uh-huh.
But both shows were shot in the Twin Cities. They needed someone to do food tips on Typical Mary Ellen, and with Rebecca's Garden, she needed someone to cook some of the foods that were coming out of the, you know, the edible ones that were coming out of the garden on half of her episodes. And I started to build some tape and a little bit of a reputation, and I was doing live local news in the Twin Cities and just kept pushing that rock uphill, and finally had the opportunity to pitch the show that I wanted to do to a bunch of networks. They all said no, and Travel Channel said yes. So here we are 13 years later.
Yeah, which amazes me. You know, I lived in Minneapolis in the late 80s, early 90s in Uptown, and I visit often. I visit a few times a year. I absolutely love the restaurant scene up there.
You know, it is, and I'll tell you, I don't know if you've been in the last year, but the quality of the cuisine keeps getting better and better and yeah. better and better every couple of months. The number of great chefs from other parts of the country who were born and raised in Minneapolis, worked there, left to learn more, and have come back to open restaurants keeps growing and growing. And it really has become a world-class food town. And I'm also thrilled from a culture standpoint a little deeper that, you know, when I moved to the Twin Cities, it represented nothing.
Yeah.
And the restaurants were terrible, and people didn't even cook food that was, you know, came from ingredients that were around them. There was no such thing as a statewide consensus on food. You know, flash forward 25 years that I've lived there, you know, not only are all those things now the complete reverse, but we have a situation where LA and New York are now dying to cook what Middle America and the Northern Prairie states have been doing for over a century, putting up vegetables, pickling, pies. I mean, you name it, whatever has come from our part of the world is now sort of the hot culinary currency.
Now, what is a guilty pleasure for me when I come up there, and I usually come up there with a half-filled suitcase because I'm going to go shop at Byerly's because that is still one of my favorite little places to go get wild rice sausage and all these great spices.
Yeah.
That's just kind of a guilty pleasure for me. I love that place.
Well, send me an email. We'll ship it to you. I'll save you the gas.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Now, your mantra's always been, if it looks good, eat it. Now, did that come by exploring all these cultural foods as you travel? I mean, you just realize, look, I'm just going to dive in and do this. I mean, it sounds like it started at a pretty early age. And not only do you embrace the food, but as you said, you embrace the culture and, most important, the people. And I think that's what is most engaging when watching you, is the connection you make to the people who are hosting you.
Yeah, you know, the world is about people. It's not about food. And I guess the big shock for me as I was traveling and then coming home was realizing how much Americans inhaled other cultures simply through their food and cared nothing about the people who stood behind those tables.
Mm-hmm.
We like the music of certain countries, the art of certain countries, but we you know, the jury is out on how we feel about the people. And, I mean, just, you know, look at the rancor and disruptive, divisive nature of our, you know, political process over the last year has revealed, and certainly the stories, you know, in over the last decade here in America has revealed a very strong feeling that, you know, of food we are happy to eat, of people we are suspicious. My experience on the road, going to 167 countries and spending literally four-fifths of my year abroad is that people are the same everywhere. And so we try to show that in our program, you know, as often and everywhere as we can. If I could simply take a bite of a dish at the end of every act before we went to commercial, I would do it that way. It would make for crappy storytelling, but I'm obsessed with the people that we meet along the way. And I'm very glad that that lesson comes through.
It does. Yeah.
You know, if you have a platform, especially one that's as big as international TV, our show airs in 70 countries, and you don't stand for something, I think you're wasting your opportunity.
Sure. Absolutely. And again, I do think what you said earlier about, you know, us accepting other cultures is a very big challenge for some people in this country. And seeing the show kind of opens that up a little bit.
It's pretty amazing. I shot a pilot a couple of days ago in Minneapolis for a new show I'm trying out on Travel Channel, and we went to an iftar, which is the meal at the end of a night during the Ramadan holy month, where Muslims will break the fast together. And we were doing it at a Somali restaurant in Minneapolis. And the Somali community in Minneapolis has been growing and been accepted, and first male Somali representative to our state house was elected a couple years ago. There's a young woman running for the state house this coming cycle. The community is really, really rocketing along. And then came the news story of 2 years ago that some young Somali men had left for the Middle East and had attempted to join ISIS and all this stuff. And the old cultural biases just come sailing through, almost like a gotcha moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sat there at this iftar talking to 200 Somalis and hanging out, and every single one of them was dealing with the same things I was doing. You know, what are your kids doing for the summer? Where are they going to school come September? You know, how do you be a better husband? How do you be a better employer or employee?
Just a basic human connection.
Local sports team. I'm just the same exact people we are. And, you know, to be able to have the privilege to tell those stories, and it's just, I'm so grateful for it, because I think the world needs to constantly be reminded of that.
Well, there's more with Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods next on 720 WGN. Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Andrew Zimmern, host of Bizarre Foods on the Travel Channel, about the 8th season premiere that premieres this Tuesday night. So on the website, Andrew, they list the 10 most bizarre foods in the world. Which ones make your list?
Well, I'll just, the worst couple of foods on planet Earth are walnuts and oatmeal. Would that they just did not exist. I would be oh so much happier. followed by about 8 or 9 different fermented and rotted foods from around the world that are extremely difficult for me to tolerate. There's a bread in East Africa called Ethiopia, especially called Enset, which is they bury it underneath a palm tree and let it rot for 3 months before they bake the dough. And it becomes riddled with mold and bacterium. If you eat it after a month, it'll kill you. If you bake it after 3 months, it's nutritious superfood, but all the rot and the stink is there, and a loaf of it, you know, seemingly would weigh a couple of ounces, but weighs about 300 pounds. It's so dense. Very, very difficult to eat. Fermented skate wing or other fermented uremic fish.
Was that Korea?
Yeah. There's a classification of fish, certain types of sharks, skate, that all pee through their skin. And these animals have so much uric acid in their flesh that they rot quicker than other fishes, and that rotten fish tastes worse than other rotten fishes. And I still can't handle most of that. I just
Hakarl in Iceland to. Is that one of them? Yeah, Hakarl.
Yeah, you know, that's one of them. You know, if you slice it thin and you put it on a piece of buttered toast, you know, that's great. But you know, your sock, if you slice it thin and put it on a piece of buttered toast, would be tolerable. And people tell me this all the time, and I'm like, well, that's really fine. That's great.
Yeah.
But go to the place in Bjarnhofen in Iceland where they've been making it for 400 years and have some crusty old Icelander hand you a big fatty chunk of it, and then you tell me how delicious it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're pretty brutally honest about these things when you're on the air, and I think you're very brave in what you do, but there's some things I know you've been pushed to the complete edge just by the look on your face.
Well, you know, I'd rather be a better guest than be rude to my host or hostess.
Right.
If I'm in a small little town in Central America and a farmer owns 3 pigs and 10 chickens, and he kills a pig and 4 chickens to make a meal for us, even if it tasted like an old sweater, I would thank him profusely and use my opportunity off camera away from him to, you know, I believe in servicing my audience and let them know how I really feel about something. But I believe in being a better guest.
Sure.
I see too many people on TV who are rude and insensitive to the people who are around them in foreign countries. And it shocks me. I take my diplomatic role very seriously in many cases, especially where we go. I'm the first American and for sure the first white American that many of these people meet or may ever meet. And I take that responsibility very seriously.
Here is one of the most unusual items I saw you talk about, and it was horse rib and rectum sausage.
Oh, yeah, in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Delicious, though. There's the thick intestine that leads right up to the rectum of the horse is used, and they strip the rib meat or off the horse's ribs and then use and sometimes leave the bone in there, although most people just use it as a poker to shove that rib meat down into the casing.
So they're using the casing,
It's mixed with salt. It's mixed with salt and garlic, and then it's just left to air dry and then typically smoked after it's fermented and dried a little bit for a couple of days. But it is delicious. The Central Asian cured meats are fantastic. You know, everyone loves the sausages and hams of Italy, France, Germany, and you know, England, all the other European countries, and, you know, American hams from the Southeast and on and on. But Chinese meat art and Central Asian meat art is almost ignored completely in this country, and it is just fantastic.
Well, and your travels continue. Season 8 premieres this Tuesday at 9 Central on the Travel Channel. What are we going to see this season?
I think it's Madrid first, but yeah, Madrid and Senegal, Cyprus and Sweden, the Bronx, and down east coastal North Carolina, and a host of other locations. Everyone always asks me what's new this season, and I say, well, you know, this go round, it's just better than ever. And people look at me and they say, well, how's that? And we literally spend our entire hiatus from shooting. We're always working on the show 12 months a year. But I spend the entire hiatus figuring out ways to make it better, whether it's with equipment, storytelling, videography, you know, maps, graphics, whatever we can do. We're still not there yet. I think I'll work on this thing for another 10 years and still not think I'm getting it right. But this season is going to be a rocket ship experience for our fans. And I think having been on, you know, Travel Channel for now 10, 11 years, there's a whole host of new fans brought over to the show as well. It's exciting.
Now, you also mentioned that you are debuting a new show, and it's going to be debuting in August, Andrew Zimmern's Driven by Food.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is one that's, you know, I hate to use the cliche of more verite, but it is more reality than anything else. Our Bizarre Foods is a docu-follow reality show. We know a lot of what's going to happen as it's happening. Before it happens, with Driven by Food, I actually get off a plane, throw my bag in the back of a cab in 8 different cities around the world, and let the cab drivers take me where they think I should go.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I like that.
It's remarkable. We learned very quickly that multiple cab drivers was the way to go on different days. And so in Berlin, for example, I have a very progressive cab driver from the West who's my age. And then we have an East German cab driver older than myself who, you know, still lives his life much in the way that he did 40 or 50 years ago, very simply, as if the extravagance of the West didn't exist. And the culture lessons, the laughs, I mean, It is unbelievable. My cabbie takes me to a public swimming pool, and we're having an unbelievable time. And I invite him to come to Minnesota and come to our country club. And he goes, a country club. Tell me how that works. And I told him, I said, someone calls you by name, they seat you down, they put towels down for you, and then attractive young people bring you drinks and food until you can't anymore. And he just looked at me and he's like, no. And he just starts laughing. And in the show, I mean, he refuses to believe that this actually exists.
That's awesome.
It was one of the funniest, greatest moments. It really is a superb show. The only female cab driver in Bangkok,
wow,
who is, you know, really fighting an uphill battle for women's rights, takes us around. And we just have an amazing, amazing show in Driven by Food. I think people are going to really like this season of Bizarre Foods. I think they're going to be blown away by Driven by Food come August 16th.
But you know what? It's funny. People talk about reality programming all the time, and half of the stuff is scripted, somewhat scripted. I really do feel when I watch your shows that I'm getting the real thing.
We don't script anything in Bizarre Foods. As a matter of fact, it's funny. Guests on the set wonder what I'm doing sitting in the car when we arrive at a restaurant or, you know, mm-hmm. in the tribal world somewhere out in the bush. I will wait until cameras are rolling and everything is. I don't even like to meet the people before we do our thing, because I want everything to. And we don't pre-script anything. Obviously, we know where we're going and we have arrangements to do certain things, to see certain things, because you can't just show up somewhere and ask them to have something on hand that takes 2 days to cook. There's not a rehearsed moment. And when people ask me what am I proudest of with Bizarre Foods, it's that we've never faked anything in the history of the show.
Yeah, it shows.
I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, it absolutely shows. And new episodes of Bizarre Foods again begins this Tuesday at 8 Central on the Travel Channel. Driven by Food premieres in August. And for all of that and more information, you can visit travelchannel.com. And for more on Andrew, visit andrewzimmern.com. Got a lot of great goodies on your website as well. Andrew,
It's a great website. We got nominated for a Beard Award this year for the website. I was very proud of that.
Very cool, and congratulations on that as well. And happy Father's Day.
Thank you.